This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The region's rents are rising, and it's becoming more and more difficult for people to become homeowners. Our next two guests have been exploring the impact that institutional investors are having on Greater Cincinnati's housing market. The Port's president and CEO, Laura Brunner, recently testified before Congress about real estate investment trusts, and Dan Horn, an investigative reporter with the Cincinnati Inquirer, was the lead reporter on an investigation into how much one local neighborhood has changed because of those investors. They both join me now. Welcome, Laura, and thanks for being here, Dan.
Hello, Lucy. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Laura, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit more about what your testimony was before Congress about all this.
Yes, it was just 2 weeks ago tomorrow that I spoke before the U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs. The chairman, Sherrod Brown, had asked me to participate and give testimony after we'd been having conversations with his team for the last 9 months or so, as we have explored more fully the impact in our region of institutional investors and our single-family home ownership stock.
Well, and tell us a little bit more about that, because our colleague Becca Costello talked with you right around the time you were about to deliver that testimony and reported that more than 4,000 single-family homes have been bought by five institutional investors since 2013 here.
Yes, and that's what we know, and we're not certain that we have captured all of them, but what we did about a year ago was approach the City of Cincinnati's Quality of Life team in their legal department and ask them to give us the names of the five worst landlords, those that have received the most number of code violations. They gave us the names of five institutions. And then we had an intern at the time probably spend a month doing research through the auditor's website. It's very difficult to figure out the ownership because so many different entities are used. And in fact, the largest owner, we found 91 LLCs that are used. So we're not certain that we captured all of them. And there may be other institutional investors besides these five. But we know these five own more than 4,100 homes in Hamilton County.
And you mentioned they're the worst offenders, according to the City of Cincinnati.
Yes. Yep. That's where we started.
Wow. So, Dan, this has had real consequences in local neighborhoods. Tell us about what you learned this has meant for Ashbrook Drive and West Price Hill.
Yeah. So we wanted to try to really measure the impact in a specific place because, you know, as Laura said, there's at least 4,100 homes across the county that are owned by these institutional investors, but that is not spread evenly. There are some neighborhoods where you see high concentrations of this kind of rental housing and others where you don't see it at all. And so we wanted to focus on a neighborhood where we were seeing a lot of it. And based on data from the Port and from Redfin, we were able to zero in on Ashbrook Drive and West Price Hill as one of those. And you know, what we found was of the 106 properties there, almost half of them were owned by some kind of investor. And most of those were by institutional investors. That's not always the case, but it was on this street. And in particular on this street, 29 of the homes were owned by Vinebrook Homes, which is the largest institutional investor of all of those that Laura mentioned earlier. And so, you know, we spent some time, you know, looking at how this transition happened, how quickly it happened. Most of this has happened in the last decade or so, most of it, that actually in the last 5 years or so. A lot of these homes that had been in this neighborhood, affordable, available starter homes for people who were looking to buy their first home are now off the market. And that's one of the more interesting pieces about this trend is that, you know, the homes they target are also the homes that people who have never bought a home before look for. And so the folks who are renting from these companies are essentially competing with these companies for properties that they can afford to buy. And they're coming off the market and they're giving them less options and less housing stock to choose from.
And you mentioned Redfin. You cited Redfin data in that story that nearly one in five home sales in the Cincinnati market goes to an institutional investor, right?
That's right. That, now, not all of those are the huge investors, but a lot of them are. And today, about 20% of every home sold in this region is being sold to an investor.
Dan, what we haven't done yet is dissect that information, but we suspect if you take home sales at under $250,000, it's got to be a staggeringly higher percentage, right? They're targeting the low to moderate income neighborhoods, which is even worse. That's why we're getting this high concentration in a few number of places. And it's, as you mentioned, it's not only the starter home market that's being affected, but it's also the neighborhoods that have the highest concentration of Black and brown residents, which is also devastating.
And Laura, you know, Dan had mentioned that the impact that these purchases are having in West Price Hill, and that these home buyers or potential home buyers are competing with these institutional investors. Tell us a little bit about what advantages the institutional investors have when it comes to purchasing these homes.
Well, I think there are a number of them. Partially, they're not just buying houses that are on the market. They don't have a sign out front that says for sale. So a potential renter looking for a home to buy doesn't even know that the house is, you know, up for sale. What the investors are doing is proactively canvassing homes with postcards and knocking on doors and sending mail and making phone calls. So they are very aggressively pursuing these homes, and then with offers of cash and a sale, a very quick sale. Mm-hmm. So the long time, that's one of the other devastating parts of this, is the long time homeowner that's lived in this house is very likely selling below market value. And we suspect that sometimes the house needs repairs and they can't afford the repairs. So they're willing to sell the house at less than market value just to avoid the problems that they face with the current condition of the home.
So, Laura, what is the impact on communities? What does it mean for a neighborhood to not have those first-time home buyers living there anymore?
Well, there's just all these different layers. So the first thing we said is we're preventing new homeowners and the wealth creation that comes from that, especially in our rising neighborhoods where people are trying to get their first start at wealth accumulation so that they can turn into a savings account and the ability to send kids to college and so forth. So that's number one. Number two, the institutional owners aren't taking care of the houses. As we mentioned, they've got the highest number of code violations. So the people that are living there are not being well cared for. Number three, they're admittedly taking out landscaping. They're denuding the house because landscaping is hard to take care of. It's expensive. So they're taking out landscaping. And there's a a ripple effect then on the surrounding homeowners. Their property values are likely to go down if the house next to them isn't cared for and doesn't have any landscaping. Mm. And then on top of all that, we know for a fact that, you know, our rents are rising higher, faster than any other place in the country. And these investors have a history of raising rents and being quick to evict. So there's the combination of that is instability in the neighborhood.
So Dan, one of the people on Ashbrook Drive tell you and your colleagues who reported that story about what their neighborhood, what their street is like now that there are so many rental homes owned by these institutional investors.
Yeah, we spoke to both renters and longtime homeowners there. And it's interesting to Laura's point earlier, one of the renters we spoke to is trying to buy a house and she's looking for essentially the kind of home she's in right now, renting from Vinebrook. And she's run into exactly what Laura said, where, you know, these homes come off the market so quickly, the average potential home buyer can't find it. And she was telling us that, you know, I'd like to get out. I'd like to buy a home like this one, but it's not on the market. She actually mentioned that she had looked at a home in another neighborhood and found that when she got there to look at it, it had already been purchased by Vinebrook. So, you know, that is going on in real time. And the homeowners who've been there for a long time, you know, it's still a nice working class neighborhood, but it's, as they all have said, it's not what it was. They're seeing, as you see in neighborhoods where you have a large amount of rental housing, that there is this transition going on. You have more You have more transient residents. It's enough, not a knock on renters, but you have a neighborhood that used to be a place where people settled, raised families, sent their kids to school, they worked in the community, and they stayed there. And now you have a more transient population that's coming and going. And to Laura's point, you know, the property isn't being cared for in the same way. I mean, it's just a renter doesn't care for a property in the same way typically that a homeowner does. And an institutional investor certainly doesn't do it the way someone who typically lives there would. So while they still consider it a nice neighborhood, they see this change happening all around them. And, you know, they don't have anything against the renters who are moving in, but they're not staying, and they're missing that stability. And they're missing that opportunity where people used to be able to come into a neighborhood like this and frankly begin their lives in a family household. And they aren't doing that anymore.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about institutional real estate investors with Laura Brunner, president and CEO of The Port, and Dan Horn, an investigative reporter with the Cincinnati Inquirer. Laura, tell us about how The Port is reacting to this and trying to reverse this. There are nearly 200 homes that The Port now owns as an effort to try to do a little bit to turn this around. Tell us about what you're doing.
Yes. So one of the five investors that we tracked, the company's name is Raineth out of California. And coincidentally, shortly after we started following this and this trend last year, I had a phone call from Shannon Murphy at Colliers, who was the receiver for this portfolio of 200 homes here in Cincinnati. And it's interesting to note that they were in receivership not because there was a market failure. They were in receivership because the owner walked away from their debt. They had unsecured mortgages, real estate loans on the portfolio. So what he had done over time, the owner of this company had done over time, is basically take the cash from the rent, not fix up the houses, not pay debt service, and then walk away. So the houses end up in a receivership, and there was an auction. And so Shannon called me to ask if we would be interested in bidding on them. My initial reaction right very quickly was, yes, of course, we have a moral imperative to do this. And then we had to figure out how to make it happen, because traditionally we only own real estate that is vacant. Mm. We've traditionally been putting vacant blighted real estate back into productive use. So this is obviously a completely different strategy, but we jumped on it very quickly, knowing that our mission then would be to fix up the houses and sell them, hopefully to the current renters, not have rent increases, not have this massive eviction process, and be patient with the current renters as we work with them on their homeownership journey. So it was a big, bold move for us. We won the auction. We competed against 12 other investors. So if we had not purchased this portfolio, these 200 houses would have been facing evictions and rent increases and probably no improvement to the physical condition of the real estate. So we issued bonds, bought them January 31st, and we're in the process of everything I just described, working with the tenants that are currently interested in home ownership in a contract that we have with Working in Neighborhoods. Sister Barb Bush's organization is going to provide the homeownership training and financial literacy work with the renters. And then we're also in the process of doing an evaluation of all of the houses to determine the scope of work that we need to do to invest in the houses so that when we sell them, they're in good shape.
And how would the transition work from renting to homeownership in the case of these properties you bought?
Well, it's a matter of helping people get qualified for a mortgage, helping them understand what home ownership looks like. We will be accessing down payment assistance programs, for example. And we're also working with renters that were delinquent on their rent to working with the community action agency to get their rent brought current so that their credit ratings look good. And then it's one of the things that we made sure when we made this purchase is that we could be patient. So we've got time. If you know somebody needs a year, somebody needs 2 years, we've got time to help them save the amount of money that they need and help them understand what the economics are going to look like when they are homeowners. keeping in mind for a very high number of these people, their mortgage payments could be less than what they're paying in rent right now.
Hmm. So we did get an email about this from Steve in Oakley. He asked what was being done to move these homes individually to the hands of private owners and occupiers, and asked how many have been sold to date to accomplish that goal. Have you gotten to a point where you've been able to sell any of those yet to the people who are currently renting them?
No, we haven't. But we have about a dozen of our renters that are working with Wynn right now in this, who have officially started this process. And then we will be continuing to work with Wynn as they have other families that go through their training that are qualified then for homeownership to fill vacant properties, because some of these houses were vacant when we bought them. They were the ones in the worst shape. So we're getting them fixed up, and then we'll be looking for buyers from them, and we'll be working with Wynn to identify those future owners.
Mm. Dan, you mentioned that in your report, one of the big institutional investors that owned property on the street in West Price Hill that you looked at was Vinebrook. You all did talk to Vinebrook. What was their response about some of these concerns that are being raised about institutional investors?
Their position is that they are, you know, following the market, and that they are taking care of the homes they buy, and that once they buy a home, they put, I think they used the figure, $20,000 to $30,000 into the home to bring it up to whatever standards they feel they need to rent it. And we saw some evidence of that on Ashbrook. You know, these homes aren't falling down. They're not slums. You know, one home, it looked like they had put on a new roof. They put in new windows. You know, they are doing some of that work. You know, I think, again, though, the question becomes long term. What happens with so much of this housing in the hands of so few of these companies? And do they maintain that going forward? Do they do the daily, weekly, monthly kind of maintenance that homeowners do on a home, especially when they're not local landlords, they're not even based here? And so those are big questions, I think, that are interesting to me as long-term, is what happens with so much of this housing in the hands of so few of these big investors? What happens if they go belly up? We saw, you know, more than a decade ago, what happened to some of these communities when a lot of these investors, you know, lost everything in the crash. You know, what happens when so many of these homes are taken off the market and no longer available to first-time home buyers? You know, when a local landlord owns a home or two, it's always possible a flipper buys it and converts it back to owner-occupied housing. But when you have these big institutional investors buying this, that's not happening on any kind of scale. They tend to be either already rentals, converted to rentals, and then they tend to stay that way. And so those right. are kind of things we're looking at.
I think what's interesting is that these investors found a really profitable new sector. Real estate investors have always owned office buildings, industrial, multifamily, retail. And after the foreclosure crisis, you know, 15 years ago, they discovered there's a whole new place to make money. And they've had a good long run at it. But we have to face the fact that, you know, markets are amoral. Their job is just to make money, right? That's what the market is, driving to efficiency. And these companies have figured that out and have done really well at it. But it's our jobs as voters and politicians to follow behind the market. And if we don't believe that the market's doing something that's comports with our values, it's our job to interfere. And that's what we're trying to do. And if we value the American dream of ownership and upward mobility, if we really care about closing the racial wealth gap, then we've got to fight back and realize that, you know, we shouldn't all be relegated to renters.
So
everyone,
Laura,
should have a chance.
Yeah, beyond what the port is doing with these 200 properties, what, are there other kinds of legislative remedies, law changes, policy changes, or funding? What can be put in place to really address these issues? What are some of the policy changes that could make a difference here?
Well, we're talking at the local, state, and federal level. And doing benchmarking, trying to find other places in the country that have initiatives to fight against it. There are a few things. There should be laws that increase the transparency so that it's the local jurisdictions know who owns the houses. You know, having one entity of 91 LLCs makes this even more complex. We found that in some cases they're getting credits for property taxes. They get reductions of their property taxes for home ownership. Obviously that shouldn't happen. All the jurisdictions need to have enough manpower so that they can be citing them for the code violations and holding them to higher levels of accountability. And overall, what we need is more, we need new construction, right? Because and that's the sad thing here is all this money is being invested in housing, but it's not creating anything new. It's just flipping from ownership to rental rather than creating new houses for sale or houses for rent. Hmm.
Dan, did you, the real estate market has been red hot for such a long time now. Did you get any sense that now that things are cooling off just a little bit, that the trend is abating at all for the folks you talk to in West Price Hill?
It doesn't appear to be yet, although I think there's a suspicion that it will as interest rates go up. But Laura may have seen some evidence of this in her data as well, but we haven't seen that yet. I would expect in the coming quarters that we'll see some of that cool off just because interest rates are going up. But, you know, these homes are in demand for a reason. They are affordable. They're close to the city's core. They're close to schools. There's a formula that these companies use to target neighborhoods with this kind of housing. And whatever the market does, that housing is going to be the same. And so I think it's likely that whether the market is up or down, you're still going to see people who are investing look to neighborhoods like these.
I've been talking with Laura Brunner, the president and CEO of The Port, and Dan Horn, an investigative reporter with the Cincinnati Inquirer. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzell. Technical director is Derek Smith. Our theme music was composed by Rob Fetters. I'm Lucy May.